You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm David Goss. I'm just opening the show for you because Andrew is incapable of doing it today. He will continue hosting going forward. And, of course, Charlie Davies with us every Thursday, although in danger of getting replaced because Ray Gatt is going to come on, crushed it, and he may have to join as a permanent Thursday host. I'm just saying that. Andrew, feel free to take it away.
Is that the end for me? Was that the end? I mean, I'm sure that...
Should we just do a David Goss Ray Gatt?
I'm sure producer Anders will have
every
used
Thursday?
That failure on my part as the cold open. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I think maybe a ham sandwich has arrived for Charlie Davies just by tracking his eyes. All right. We've got a big show for you today. As you said, Ray Gatt is going to be on for a fun chat that will cover basically everything in Major League Soccer, including why he tucks his shirt in with such passion. So look forward to that one. Let's start with the mail, though, because we've been saving the mail till the end, and it's probably the wrong strategy. And this mail from Mike Moon really sets us up on what is, I think, the news of the day. And it's still just being reported. It's not official. Sam Stachel has put it out there. That points per game as of, 12:15 p.m. Eastern, points per game will be the determining factor in playoff places for Major League Soccer. And we're assuming at this point right now that that would also mean it's the determining factor for the Supporters' Shield, because the Supporters' Shield is given to the team that's number one in the overall seeding for the playoffs. Let's read through it. What do we got?
Oh, you want me to read it?
Sure.
This has you been specifically a, I've, said I've you were going to read it. Now
I've been
read
a train wreck
it.
From the start.
Mike Moon emailed us and said, "I was able to craft a good analogy that I think sums up the difference in relative attributes of the Shield versus the Cup. There are two metrics for evaluating an internal combustion engine that I think apply nicely for the Shield versus Cup discussion: torque and horsepower. Heavy trucks use diesel engines for their durability, efficiency, and for the torque they produce. These vehicles are great for heavy duty, long haul performance day after day. Race cars use engines that deliver high horsepower to help them accelerate quickly and reach high top speeds. These vehicles are relatively delicate and temperamental. They are better in short but intense bursts of performance and then need maintenance or repair before being able to perform and win again. People who like machines acknowledge that torque and horsepower are excellent qualities, each with their own optimal application. This translates to soccer teams like this. The Supporters' Shield winners are the teams that have good torque, allowing them to be best at the long haul of dominance for an entire season. The MLS Cup winners, on the other hand, have good horsepower, accelerating past the rest of the field, getting to the finish line first. People who love soccer should be able to appreciate both attributes and celebrate them differently as they achieve their outcomes. Not everyone has to love both. It's perfectly natural to appreciate race cars and not trucks or vice versa, blah, blah, blah. The rare team that is able to compete both may be best compared to a high-quality electric car, staying brand neutral here. Electric cars have tons of torque and shocking levels of acceleration. They're way easier to maintain as well. Perhaps the standard that great teams will have to meet in our electric future will be having to win both trophies." And then he goes on to sign off as Moeta, which was his Total Soccer Show listener name back in the day, and he gives a shout out to Taylor and Daryl as well. I think it's a pretty good point. I love the analogy.
It's a lot to chew on. I've never been a car guy. I've never been an engine guy.
You're more of a subwoofer guy. You only focus on that.
Certainly more of the audio componentry is going to be where I have expertise.
It makes sense, right? One is long term and getting across the season. The other is short bursts, but maybe in higher intensity games in the playoffs. But I like the idea of the electric car being the future, and the future in MLS, which I think is what we've discussed, is now you have to win in both. To Kalen's point, back then, you just had to win MLS Cup. That's all people cared about. Doyle's on a whole nother strain. And I think the LAFC kind of proven that they are one of the two or three greatest teams in MLS history. They didn't win MLS Cup. But going forward, the idea is you have to be able to compete in both to be considered a great MLS team.
And there are some electric cars. There are some precursors, let's say, that did win both and showed us
the Prius path.
Yes, the Priuses of the past. Or, you know, if we brand neutral, I'm sure there's a different one out there.
Tesla right now.
Okay, look, the big news here at the top of the show, which we've just ran right through and had a brilliant email there from Moeta, is about points per game in the playoffs. and potentially points per game in the Shield, though I haven't seen that yet. Like I said, it's about noonish here on Thursday. What do you think about this change, guys? And we thought it was coming. I mean, the fact of the matter is not every team in the league is going to play the same number of games. And there are two sides of that. One of the sides is your team might have been the team that had a positive case of COVID. The flip side of that is your team might not have had any issues, but you were scheduled to play that team and were just unlucky. So I think there was an element of justice here. And the grand scheme of things, teams on both sides are going to feel hard done by potentially, depending on where they end up in the standings and how they move up and down. The Rapids, of course, are going to be very, very happy about this. And other teams might say, hey, that's not fair, especially if they drop out in the Western Conference and the Rapids make it. How do you feel, Div?
Can I start with a quote from Steve Zakuani on Twitter? Because it's more thought out than my ideas. On Sam Stajskal, reported this. No, rumored this.
Yes, he rumored
Paul it. Has not yet reported it yet.
Correct.
So he said it, and Steve quote tweeted him, said, couldn't disagree more with this approach. If my team has played 23 games, and the team that played four or five less gets in ahead of me because of points per game, that's mayhem. Playing more games presents more opportunities to drop points and bring down your points per game. I know it's not the Rapids' fault because of COVID, but this is my answer. These are my two cents.
So I just want to throw this out there. As these standings are right now on this Thursday, the Chicago Fire would move in above Inter Miami, who currently are above as the playoff standings are on points and tiebreakers. Chicago Fire would move in above Inter Miami because they have 1.05 points per game. They played one game less than have Inter Miami, and they have the same number of points. So that would be a change. You have a clear sort of consequence of the decision right there. In the Western Conference, it would hold steady as it is, except that Vancouver would drop out and the Colorado Rapids would jump in on 1.27 points per game. So I'm sure Mark Dos Santos is thinking about this potential decision and saying, oh boy, I don't like that one, because the Rapids have only played 15 games to his team's 21 at this point. Charlie, you've been shaking your head. How do you feel?
Everybody's in the same boat. And I think what it comes down to is, are you being held accountable for your actions? And is the team doing everything they can to be able to go out every weekend and perform and play? And if you have been in the right, if you have been able to field your team, field players to go out there and play every week, you shouldn't be penalized for the teams that can't or haven't. And so, if you look across the league, Nashville and Dallas were sent home from the MLS back tournament because they didn't have their players in order or in line, whatever it is. That was their punishment. The tournament went on, was successful. Everything was great. You come back out of it. Now Colorado hasn't been able to keep everyone in line. But
let me say this, Charlie, real quick. Okay. I'm not saying you're wrong, but it has to be a longer investigation to whether or not teams did things wrong outside of protocol, or if the society we live in, it's unavoidable. Because there is the reality that you could do everything right in the society we currently live in the United States, maybe Canada, but probably less so, and still get COVID. Because not everyone's wearing masks. Not everyone's doing the right things around you.
That's if you your kids are going to school. Situations, though, right?
So I'm just saying, we don't know that it's Colorado's fault. It could be. And if it is similar to what was
every team is doing, Dallas team has the same.
But I'm just saying there, it's not 100% sure that because someone got it, they did something wrong.
Right.
It could be the reality, but we're not positive.
Right. But you're still not keeping them isolated when need be. Right. And tests do come up positive. Right. And so when those tests do come up positive, what's the contract tracing like? What, how quick are you being able to put it out, you know, and make sure people are safe and making sure you're allowing enough time in between training sessions once those tests are given? So every team has had to go through this. It isn't just unique to Colorado and their players and in their area. Every team has different challenges and obstacles when it comes to COVID. In this case, in this instance, when they've played so much more games and minutes than everyone else, they should not be allowed to go into the playoffs. It's that simple. No, it should not be allowed. I'm purely talking as if I'm playing on the field as a player and I've done everything in my power to stay at home and literally point A to point B, home training. That's it. That's all I do. I don't socialize with anyone else. I see my teammates. Even that, I'm still taking care of myself. I'm still being, you know, smart when it comes to, wearing a mask when I'm not on the field, yada, yada. And then to have another team who hasn't done it right, and they've played five or six less games, and all of a sudden, and they haven't gotten great results either. It's not like they're a great team. It's not like you're looking at Seattle or Portland or LAFC, and they've played five less games, but their quality, and they still win when they play. This is Colorado Rapids. They're not a good team. And for them all of a sudden to jump into the playoffs, no, that's not right. That, for me, that doesn't sit well with me.
So I've been listening to this, and of course I came on this show, and I said the solution that I would have would be that you have to get a minimum number of games in. Because just the way of the world is there are two sides, as you said. There's a team that maybe can't play because they tested positive, and there's a team that can't play because somebody else tested positive through no fault of their own. And so then I look at this, and I think it's not just about the bottom of the conferences. It's not just about who's going to pop in and who's going to drop out. It's also about seeding and sort of the equitable nature of seeding in the proper way. Because, like, again, there are teams like the Sounders. It's not their fault they have 19 games played, or they'll play one less game, or I think they'll get to 22 on the year compared to everybody else. Like, why should they be punished in the seeding situation and on down the list? Like, you had to come up with something universal. And I think no matter what Major League Soccer did, somebody was going to be frustrated. Somebody right. was going to feel it was unfair. Somebody was going to say, well, we got the raw end of this deal. To me, when it comes to both seeding, 1 through 10 in the East, and remember, that's important because there are play-in games. You can skip an entire round of this playoffs, and 1 through 8 in the West. You had to have some semblance of consistency. And while I might have been on the side just in a theoretical sense of saying, play 20 games, then go by points, let it be what it is, I think this is probably top to bottom the most equitable, with some people that are going to say, not fair, not right, especially if they're the ones that don't get in and the Colorado Rapids do and they have more points. Now, the flip side of that equation is the Rapids have 19 points, Vancouver have 24. It is entirely possible that the Rapids could push their way up into just raw points. That is unlikely, you would think, given the spread right now of 5. And they might lose all their games, and they might drop from 1.272. So at the end of the year on decision day, we might be sitting here thinking, boy, we really gnashed our teeth over this. We tried to rip it apart. And as it stands, it doesn't matter that much. But there are definitely going to be opinions about this. You can bet on that. Mark Dos Santos, you would think Mateus Almeida, Robin Fraser will have something to say. On the other side, Chicago Fire got to be sitting here thinking, if this does happen, they're like, oh, well, we really needed that. Like, this was a year where we had to make the playoffs, or it sure felt that way. It's just an interesting, crazy, unpredictable, as I've said time and time again, FUBAR year, and that's where it stands right now. Let's talk about the team, though. Let's go positive. How about that? The team that is the Supporters' Shield leader right now, both on points and on points per game. That's the Philadelphia Union, 2.1 points per game. They got a big win against the Chicago Fire on Wednesday night, 2-1. There were some controversial calls there, so go check out Instant Replay. Charlie and I broke those down earlier today. But it looks like they're probably going to win the Supporters' Shield if everything goes as planned, let's say. They are at Columbus, then home against New England. Not easy, not easy. For Toronto, who lost to NYCFC, they are home against Miami at the New York Red Bulls. How close are we to history for the Union right now? It's tantalizing.
So from quality and form, they're there. But you have to point out, Andre Blake went off injured yesterday. Jose Martinez, his agent, announced that he had COVID. So he was kept out of the last game. We don't know how long that layoff will be. And Ray Gattis himself came off injured in the last game. This is a Philly team that's shown they have depth. They can win games in a few different ways. They have players that can lead them. But those are three pretty influential pieces of their team that are missing. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. And Columbus still has things to play for, because Columbus is trying to get out of that three seed, to get out of that first round and get a bye. So that's a huge game this weekend. I think it's on national TV on Sunday. That's the biggest game of the weekend. That's not a walk in the park for Philly. If they lose that game, now you have an opening for Toronto. And I have no idea how Seattle gets in, or KC, but maybe they can, because like you explained, it's points per game chaos. But it opens the door. And I think that gives that hope for Toronto to kind of push for it. So I don't think it's cut and dry. And that's not to the fault of the way Philly's played. It's just the reality of 2020.
Can I just ask you guys, because the Union social media team found an easy target, aka me, to drag when I said that they don't have, quote, any credible MVP candidates. And then I realized early, before they even quoted me, scheduled tweets for the win, that I had been a little too strong on that. And it's not that they don't have credible MVP candidates. It's that there are too many candidates who have credible cases to be the most important player on that particular team to have one singular MVP candidate. Do Philly have an MVP candidate to you, Charlie, or is it just too spread out?
For Philadelphia, I think we saw Andre Blake was the clear MVP early on this year. MLS's back tournament, it was all Andre Blake. When you look at Philadelphia, you know, yes, Brian Aaronson has looked sharp at times. I mean, he's earned a move to Red Bull Salzburg. Mark McKenzie has been a standout, but the best player has been Andre Blake for the Philadelphia Union. That's been the best player.
And it's not 2000 right now. Tony Meola is not reincarnated. Has not happened. I'm sorry. Like an MVP ballot race right now, that's just not going to happen in modern.
No, MLS. It's not. And throughout the season, it's been, you know, one player or the other, whether it's been Alejandro Bedoya in the midfield. He's not going to get all the plaudits because he doesn't have the stats. But as far as an importance to the team, setting the tone, holding everyone accountable, being involved in the defensive side of the ball as well as the attacking side and keeping the ball moving, he is really kind of the Philadelphia Union.
But
that's him.
And to their credit, right, that's what's made them a Supporters Shield leader. But anytime you can say multiple players on one team, it's going to be hard for one player to win an award like that.
By the way,
that's why there's not going to be an MVP.
Yeah, exactly. In Seattle as well. So I agree with Weeby's point. I think Pasuelo is still leading the charge for MVP. I think Lodero gets in because of the amount of games he's played in such a condensed season. He's been the consistency for what looks like the second or third best team. And Charlie came on the show this summer and said Jonathan Mensah. And I don't know how you can step away from it. I understand they're not going to win Supporters Shield.
As they continue to drop, you can't.
They are still the best defensive team in the league.
Great. That's awesome. But you cannot give a defender the MVP if their team does not finish number one.
It's not his fault they can't score.
It's
Zellerayan got hurt. Nagby got hurt. And his team is still the best defensive team.
But Weeby did bring up something.
No. It's because if you're going to choose a defender, you choose Walker Zimmerman.
Walker Zimmerman or Mensah. And he chose Walker Zimmerman.
I would take Walker.
Wait. Time out. Let me just check right now. So the MVP of Major League Soccer is going to come from the eighth best team in the Eastern Conference. Do I have those standings right now?
Let's just do defender.
You want to do a quick search for me? Yeah, the eighth best team. Best team in the Eastern Conference who plays in a low block and defends with 11,
correct,
has the best defender in MLS. But Jonathan Mensah, leading in touches, correct, for a defender, one of the best passers in the league, playing for a team that's going to play on the front foot most of the time, is third in the East. He's not going to get a Defensive Player of the Year or MVP because Weeby likes Walker Zimmerman.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Jonathan Mensah is one of the final three. But if I had to choose an MVP, you take this guy off their team, where would that team be? Nashville, let's be frank, they don't have what Columbus Crew have in the rest of the roster. And I'm not trying to slag off anybody on the Nashville roster, what they've built, but it is not constructed in the same way as the Crew are. And I don't think they would be as successful if Walker Zimmerman was out versus what the Crew would be if Jonathan Mensah was out. By the way, the Crew have one win in seven games. It's not like we're talking about some
juggernaut. They can't score because Zellerayan and Nagby have been hurt and Sardis
hasn't
been
starting. Four times in that time. Oh, by the way, okay, so they've lost four times. They've drawn once. They have a shutout in seven games. Yeah, a single shutout in seven games. No, actually, it's an eight.
He plays with Aiden Morris and Sebastian Berhalter in front of him. Oh, that's perfect. 19 years old.
Because I just rewatched our prediction show and you went all in on Sebastian Berhalter and Aiden Morris on that show.
For sure.
So don't try to come back now and say that they don't count, that they're not good enough, they're too young.
Oh, we're going to compare them to Dax McCarty and Annabelle Godoy. That's a fair comparison.
No, it comes back to the style of play.
Nashville, thank you.
Defend with 10 in the box, in their own box.
It's easier to do.
It is easier to do.
So then Walker Zimmerman loses out to Mensah.
But this is where it gets interesting. Walker Zimmerman, what he does for Nashville, he also has to be like their leading goal scorer.
Yeah, but that's
on all set
pieces. I don't
care
that he's tall on set pieces. Because
it's more than being tall, because you could say that across the league. If you're a center back and you're tall, then all of a sudden you're gonna be that big presence in the box on all set pieces and score goals for your team. Walker Zimmerman takes it up on a whole another level.
On all set pieces,
he is so dangerous. And you've seen the importance that he played with that LAFC team last year. It's evident. Without him, they still have Eddie Segura. And I thought Eddie Segura was better last year when it comes to having that partnership. But it also shows Eddie Segura is not the same without Walker Zimmerman.
Maybe, but now Murillo's there, and he looks good again.
And look, the difference is, again,
here is all you need. I bet you that if you replaced Walker Zimmerman with an MLS average player, I could get similar results from Nashville than if you replaced Jonathan Mensah. If you replace Jonathan Mensah, now you've got Abubakar Keita or Josh Williams when he's not suspended playing alongside this player. Mensah has to do so much more for his team, and his team is better.
I like Dave Romney. He's had a good year, but are we putting Dave Romney on a pedestal?
No,
in that sense?
Dave Romney's had a good year because they play with 11 behind the ball, and it's easier to defend. Every single soccer player will tell you there's no expansive football.
Here's the difference.
You could play that way if you are a USL team, if you are a team that is in a second division. Any type of team that you feel like, man, we don't have the quality to really go out and attack and throw numbers forward, they're going to typically play with 10 in the box, parking the bus. Is exactly what Nashville does, because if they try to play any other way, they're going to be beaten 4-5. That's at least the confidence the coach has when you line up a team like that. So they've been able to get results and be effective playing that style. So they're going to continue to play,
which low block, by the way, I'm fine with. I'm okay with it.
And set pieces.
They're an expansion team. They want to make the playoffs.
This is the roster they put together.
Exactly. They have every right to do what it is they do. I'm not complaining about that. But you then can't try and pick a piece out and say his performances are equal to another player's performance. The same can be said for Zardes versus whatever forward is playing for Nashville. It's harder to play center forward for Nashville, but they're not putting up the performances. So it's not a conversation. So you cannot say that what Walker Zimmerman has done is equal to what Jonathan Mensah has done.
It's one more goal on the season, same number of games played, for an expansion team that hadn't seen each other, didn't know each other sight or sound ahead of January, versus the Columbus Crew, who had an ongoing project, who have multiple players who are just as valuable to the team as Jonathan Mensah and Zellerion and Nagby. You've seen that. They have zero shutouts in 8 games. They have 1 win in their last 7 games. I like Jonathan Mensah. I did an amazing rewatch with him earlier this year. He's an incredible guy. He and Walker Zimmerman are the first two people on that Defender of the Year ballot. I'm just saying right now, if I was going to go MVP, you take one off their team and see what happens. I think you can play that low block with complete confidence and eat games out because you have Walker Zimmerman back there right now.
The same
is true for Jonathan Mensah, but the fact is neither of them are MVP candidates.
Who are the top 4 teams in MLS? Toronto, Union, Philly, Seattle, Toronto, and Columbus.
Where's Portland? They have one win in seven.
Where's Portland?
What does it matter when the 1 win in 7, if they are the 4th best team on points in the league? That means they won games at some point.
I'll take Sporting Kansas City right now over them.
Oh, really?
Oh, no way.
This conversation's now over. I didn't realize you were a homer.
In this moment, I would.
He's a homer. No, you're a homer.
For sure.
If you think Sporting Kansas City is a top team in this league,
FC Cincinnati 1-0.
You are deranged.
Fine. on that front, I think it's time for us to move on.
Let's bring sanity to the show.
All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We are on with the Tuck, Ray Gaddis of the Philadelphia Union. Ray, what's up, man? Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you guys for having me. Everything's going good.
All right, we will get to the Tuck and your five-a-side among Tuckers in Major League Soccer. We'll talk about a bunch more other things, including, of course, what BPC is doing with MLS now in that partnership and voting at Subaru Park. But I just got to start because we've been yelling at each other about this for the last 5 minutes. I say that the Union don't have a MVP candidate because there are too many of you that are playing at that level, that are indispensable, that have been there the entire season. I see some eye rolls on the bottom of the screen. But in your mind, Ray, who is the Union MVP this year?
I'm gonna have to roll out a list of people as well. You know, I'm gonna start with our leader on the field, Alejandro Bedoya. You know, for me as a player, worth every penny paid for. He's been a player who's been consistent. He's led us. He scores the big time goal. He's not gonna get you your 10 goals, but all the stuff he does box to box. He's gonna get you assists. And for me, him playing in front of me, I know he's another guy like me. He's gonna battle. So easily Bedoya for everything he does on and off the field. Then not to mention the guy behind me, you got Andre Blake. I mean, he makes the save against Lee Wynn. I've seen a better save in New England actually in his career to my point, but it seems like he makes great saves against New England. But him just being a brick wall. You guys seen what he did in the MLS's back tournament, his leadership capabilities. And you got Mark McKenzie. And we got arguably two of the best center backs. I'm not just saying that because they're on my team, but you know, I think these guys are amazing. And the trajectory for Mark is going up, and he improves every day. To hit a left-footed diagonal ball across the field, being a right-footed player, come on, you know. Jamiro Montero, I tell him every day before the games, drive the car, meaning, you know, you boss the field, you dictate the game. You know, people may say, like, all the assists and the goals haven't been there this year, but he does a lot of things across the field that you want out of your midfield. And we talk about the best dude with the best flow in the league. Talking about Brendan Aaronson, he doesn't cut them locks. You just see him dancing around the field. I mean, you've seen his capabilities grow hand over hand. Honestly, I would tell you, like, if we really had a guy who's just been clear cut, and then Santos with this surge of goals, and Casper led us for a while. There's a plethora of people. This guy, Jose Martinez, I call him, like, you know, the Tasmanian devil. Like, he's here, he's there, you know, he has his own nicknames, but he reminds me of like an old pit bull, you know, like he's there with the bite and he brings it, you know. He's a funny dude too. So, I mean, it makes it all the best, but he gives you the best. It's been a collective effort.
Just go down.
I was going to say, this is the starting lineup right here. This is the total 11.
Yeah, the super
Ray, the only person you haven't said is yourself. So do you want to do the Ray Gattis for MVP pitch now?
Nah, Charlie knows me. You know, I come from a humble background. The Lord, you know, humility, weakness, it's not really about me. My thing's always been, you know, just play hard and give him my best. So, you know, me and my dad say is when this is all done and over with, you don't have no regrets. And, you know, that's something that I always just lived about. Charlie knows that, being my teammate. And actually, you know, Charlie taught me a lot too. Like, he knows I'm very serious, like, when it's game time. But Charlie taught me how to, especially in this latter portion of my career, to really enjoy the little things and fine moments, you know, because, you know, every day is a blessing, especially in this season in COVID-19. And, you know, that is something that I got from Chuck D, as I call him, you know. But, Anthony Fontana.
Oh my God.
This man, you know, he, if you want to go to a salsa party, you know what I mean? He's got the chip for you. I mean, he's finally getting his just due. But this season, I think me and him had a conversation about, when you get on the field, take your opportunities, because I've seen the capabilities in the young man for a while. You know, watching him being a homegrown and being in the system, so first team player. And even his first ever game, he scored. And to really see it start to come to fruition, and he gets it when he gets his opportunities, and he works so hard. You know, he's an unsung hero, especially in our team. And the revelation and the Union have a lot to look forward to, especially with the departure of Brendan Aaronson at the end of this season. We have someone who's capable, Anthony Fontana. Very different games, but it shows the product is there.
I appreciate this, Ray. I will also say to you, Charlie, that this now means there is a moratorium on Anthony Fontana talk. We've met our quota. We love Anthony Fontana, but Chuck has been beating this drum so much. You're a humble guy, Ray. We know that.
I feel fulfilled now, so go ahead.
We know that. But before we get to the supporter shield, what the Union are doing, and so much more, I have to ask you, are you going to be team fullback? Why can't a fullback win Defender of the Year? There might not be an MVP candidate from the Union, but step up for your team fullback. Who would be the best one in the league, and why can't we get one of these guys a league award 1 year?
For sure, I think if you even look at Kai, you see the assist that he gave to Santos, and last year I believe he had 8. I love sports, so I'm always watching, whether it's soccer, football, whatever. But why can't it be Kai? For me, all the dirty things that you don't see on the field, if you're looking for MVP in that aspect, that's my job, to keep the ball in the net, to shut down the best player on the field. That's always been my role. It's almost like I consider myself like a Dennis Rodman. I'm not the one that's going to get the points, but I'm going to do my job to the best of my ability. And you know what you're going to get from me, bottom line. So as long as I take the best player out of the game, that's okay with me. You know what I mean? I ain't got to be in the tabloid.
That's always been your MO. And so now that you brought it up, marking the best player and taking him out of the game, and that's just been your approach to every match. It's like, you know what? I know what I got to do. You're not going to get by me, and I'm not going to treat you any different. Who's been the toughest mark for you over the course of your year of your years with the Philadelphia Union?
Of course, Thierry. It's not so much about the physicality portion, but his thinking was just there. You know, he was one step ahead of you, even in the movements off the back shoulder. He's one that comes to mind. In playing on the left and right side, I've had the ability to see a lot of good players. Keenan as well. Same thing. Not the fastest guy, but these guys really understood football in that sense where they were smart enough to put themselves in the right position. Soccer's not always about who's the fastest, who's the strongest, but a tough mark is a person who's reading the game, who's really developing. Now, from a physicality standpoint, Elise from Houston, the man was physically strong. He was fat. He was fast. He could jump. You know, you never knew what you were going to get on the night from him. He's a wild card, but he's somebody that can run at you. He can slow it down. You know,
Give me a Nacho Piatti scouting report.
I was just about to say, what about Nacho?
Oh, me and him had some good battles. You know, Nacho is very good. Left foot, right foot. You know, those are the players that you got to worry about. Not just like one-sided person, and don't let him get started dribbling. You know what I mean? He can pick a pass too. So for sure, Nacho.
So we've seen you face off against all these people on TV, so we get to watch it. But in training, we don't get to watch. And a lot of people would bring up Ilsenio when you talk about best 1v1s. Do you have any ability to stop him? Do you have any advice for anyone else, or is he unstoppable?
Well, first of all, I'm not about to let anybody advice I call him Skill Senior. So like me and him sit right next to each other in the locker room. So that's my locker mate. Me and him laugh every day. First of all, you know, I have to admit on here, you know, when I go up against El Senior, it prepares me for the game. And El Senior's got a lot of bodies, including me, like with the man count. And now we're talking like he wants me to make a lot of people, but El Senio is unstoppable when he's in form and he's going. You know, he's got this, I don't care. You can watch the tape all you want. He's got this like dead leg where it hangs. And you think you're gonna get a touch in, and then he can drop that leg so fast and then be out, in and out. You just never know. Like it's like a teasing thing. Like I watch a lot of defenders. Me personally, him playing in front of me too, I just like, here it comes, and you can't do nothing about it. I said, oh, man, you know, you have to.
It is a dead leg.
He just, go watch the tape. He hangs his leg.
Yeah, and it's like the lazy leg.
Yeah,
like,
he picks it up and drops it, and then you think you're going to get a toe poke. And then by the time you're on that one knee, you're doing the whole look behind El Senio. You see 2-5. That's all you see. And then that's it. And I'm just like, you know, I have to compose myself sometime in the game because I'm like, oh, like, you know, I say something like, you know, the person got shook up, and I'm just like, man. So ain't no stopping El Senio. When he gets going and he's in form, it's good to watch.
Beware the dangle, beware the dead leg. Let's talk about this collective, though, too, because you win again last night. You're at 44 points. You're atop the East. That means you're atop the Shield standings. There are rumblings right now as we tape at, 12:46 p.m. Eastern time on this Thursday that the points per game is going to be switching over Shield and playoffs, and it's going to be points per game. As far as the Shield goes right now, how are you feeling, Ray?
Oh, we're just taking it one game at a time at the Philadelphia Union. I mean, the next game that's ahead is the Columbus Crew, and that's just what we're focused on. I don't think you can worry about those things. If you take care of the business that's ahead of you and not try to think about those things, everything else will fall into place. I mean, that's the message that I'm preaching. That's what we're preaching around here. I mean, this has been a very unique year. We understand, like I said, we were talking about COVID has really changed the dynamic, you know, points per game. We understand these are all factors that are out of our control. The only thing you can control as a player and as a team is the game ahead of you and going out there and performing. So all that stuff will take care of itself.
I respect the professionalism. You're not even going to let Weeby get you on that one.
You just shut down the wall. I was like, you know, I was an opposing winger, and I'm like, Rick just Wall, take right me out. Switch sides, man. Switch sides. Get somebody on Ray.
But let me ask this. The Toronto game and the 5-0 win, for people from the outside, I think for all of us, Charlie obviously different because he played in Philly, but we had a friend text us and say, like, this is kind of one of those emotional moments where we've all watched you as a group, I'd say the last 4 years, grow. under Jim Curtin, the young players, yourself, all these pieces. And it felt like that was a big moment. What did it feel like for you having it happen? What was it like in the locker room after to just maybe get over that hump or have that big moment where you could just explode on the national stage and show everyone who the Philadelphia Union are?
I think there's a lot of different components to this question. I mean, the first is, you know, obviously I watched the show and I see the headlines in MLS. Player, young players, you put them in these type of environments. You let them see what they can do. It's a confidence booster for them as well, playing against established players. Also, from my standpoint, you know, it's all about perception and vision. There is two different things. You know, the perception is that, you know, we took a major leap, and we did. But the reality is this is a very good Toronto team, a team that we could see later in the playoffs. And the reality is, like I said, I'm just going to give you the truth. When we went up there, we didn't have our full squad. When Toronto came here, they didn't have their full squad. That's not lost on me. So we both teams did what they were supposed to do in that manner. So we don't take Toronto lightly, neither does anybody else. So, I mean, from a club standpoint, it was a big win in helping us continue to go forward with the supporter shield. But Toronto is a very good team. Let's not get that twisted.
Yeah, veteran right you
know,
there.
Let's not get this twisted. You know, no Josie. One of the hottest young men's playing up top. He didn't play that on that night. You know, no Mavinga. I'm not naive. You know, like I said, that comes with experience and being humble. Toronto's a very good team. It was a big win for our team, and we did what we were supposed to do. Now, it was a big leap in the past. I've been on Philadelphia for 9 years where we might not have took care of business early on in my career. Now, this was a professional performance where, okay, we did what we were supposed to do, and we lived up to what we were supposed to do, especially with the standings and how we were playing. That's the big difference, that we take leaps and bounds where we've now become more professional in our way that we go about handling business.
You're not going to catch Ray Gattis on a whiteboard anywhere ahead of games. We know that, Ray. But look, I still have to know. This club hasn't won a trophy. You guys have not, and you've been close, and you've had heartbreak, and you're on the brink of doing it, perhaps.
Oh, it's there. I know it's right up in here.
I know. You just got to handle it. Tell me what the shield itself, that particular competition, that trophy, means to you personally, and has that perception, as you say, changed in your mind over the years? Kalen Carr comes on the show and says all the time that it doesn't mean now what it used to mean.
Well, for the club, just from a club standpoint to answer, it would be amazing to raise the first ever trophy. I think that would lift a burden off the club in that sense. And like I said, it's changing the trajectory of the culture here from that standpoint. I think it means things or it's different in other people's eyes. But for our club, I think it would be a great gesture to say, hey, we're going forward. We brought some hardware here. And that's my answer to it. I mean, everybody's going to have a different opinion about it. But, you know, to win the first trophy here, it would be remarkable being here this long as well. And to see Coach Curtin lift the trophy, and he's worked so hard and assembled a team and managed the team well, and him being here as long as I have, it would be a great gesture.
Can we get to some 5v5 fun stuff then?
Yes, let's get to the fun stuff. Let's do it.
I was waiting for somebody to say something about it.
All right.
Take it away, Charlie.
What should we have him do first?
Let's start off with the tuck, because let's get this team out the way. Give me your five professional tuck players to head into a tournament. You need to have your guys ready. Who's your five players that go with the tuck?
That's an awkward high tuck.
All right, first of all, we got Chuck D as our manager, because he's gonna give you that lip. You know, our guys, we're gonna be so locked in. My team, we're so focused on playing. Charlie's gonna do the talking for us. Number one, Diego Char. Hands
Ooh,
down.
Yes.
Come on, man. We cannot forget about Diego.
That's a great attack.
You know what I mean? This man, he's going to do box to box. He's going to get the job done. We already talked about Sammy from Montreal. Okay. I got all workers here. You know what I mean? I said, we're no nonsense. We'll get the job done. Because the five-a-side game, you know,
Charlie, relax.
If you got anybody that's on your team, some cats like to just linger and cherry pick, aka Chuck D myself, watching them a couple of times. but if you don't work, if you're that one guy that doesn't work, you can still get goals regardless, even if you got Chuck up top. Then we got Debo, Ja'Cory Hayes, Minnesota. He's come on the scene. I'm always tracking games. He scored some big goals for Minnesota this year. Like I said, we got a lot of midfielders. And then my last player not known to many, but I got to go with one of my guys, Cole Turner. He's an upcoming homegrown. Mm-hmm. He got some minutes, his first ever game. Another midfielder. And then I'm going to round it off for myself. That's okay. How I'm going.
How did you?
I like that group.
I need to know, is there a brotherhood of the Tuck? You know, post game, do the Tuckers come and say, hey, what's up? Good Tuck today. Good Tuck. Well done with the drawstring. That was a tight one. Your elastic is holding up. And how did you decide that you were a person who was just going to be all Tuck all the time?
There's a mutual handshake. There's a mutual appreciation. There's kind of some grumblings. Do you go right to left, or are you a left to right? Oh. Guy, you
know what I mean? Technique, yes.
Technique is essential. You know what I mean? And you know, do you actually tie up your shorts? Some guys do. Some guys don't. You know, but me, I tie mine up to keep it. To keep it square.
Keep it clean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, the Tuck all started my club team. Matt Hedges was on my club team. Perry Kitchen was on my club team growing up. So we had guys in there and...
You're dropping these names. Okay.
I mean, I'm giving you the reality. I can only give you the real, you know what I mean?
And you were salty. We get it.
Yeah, yeah. And these guys know I've been tucking for a long time. And, you know, it all started about professionalism with our club coach. You know, he would always make us, number one, we couldn't play. We had dirty boots. We would always have to come on the field clean. He would always make us walk the field. This is back in the day where, you know, these new academies, we built our own field. So we had to take out the rocks of the field. We did our own landscaping as a team. They'll tell you. And it all started there, too. My dad was in the military. He was in the Army. Just professionalism, you know. Ever since then, it's just always been Tuck since younger. You know what I mean? It's just business, nothing personal. That was kind of the attitude, you know what I mean? So it's always been there. It just kind of happened, but it was just kind of like, too, when I'm a man of faith, I'm a clergyman, I'm a minister, you know, I just always had my shirt tucked in, so it didn't look always neat. And I'm a neat person, so like, I make my bed up on the road, you know? Everything's got to be in line, you know? So that's how the Tuck started. That's the legend of the Tuck.
Exactly. And what a legend it is. All right, let's widen the scope for you. You have all of Major League Soccer to choose from, Ray, and you're trying to win a 5v5 tournament. This is like an alternative reality that we all can dream about and appreciate, but probably never see. Who are you pulling from? You don't have to. In some ways, I want to keep you from picking union players, because it's too predictable. You already went through the whole roster.
No union.
You're five-a-side team.
And Ray, this is the stakes. Aliens are going to conquer the world if you don't beat them in 5v5. That's how important this group is.
All right. Let me see. I'm definitely going to pick Mark McKenzie. I know we're getting away from union players.
He's a rule breaker.
I'm definitely going to pick Mark McKenzie.
All right. As you think, walk us through Mark's improvement, let's call it, or his increased sort of exposure and appreciation in a national sense. From your point of view in the last year, how's Mark grown?
Tactically, positioning on the field, putting out fires before they have to be put out due to the physicality aspect of his game. I mean, reading the flight, stepping in, intercepting a lot of balls. Like I said, positioning himself in the right positions where again, he doesn't have to use his speed. He doesn't have to use all of these attributes, but just the awareness and the technical standpoint. Also, I was talking about this left foot of his. He's a right-footed player, but he can hit the ball left and right foot. I watch him do it all the time. And to see the repetition and see it actually in game versus real competition in real time. And then the last 2 weeks, anytime you can get two or three goals from your center backs, a team's going to probably win a lot of games. We've been getting that from Jack Elliott. Jacob Gleason is a beast. I really call him the Viking, you know, no pun intended, you know, on our team. And we got these guys in here that are scoring, but seeing his movements, even in the box on set pieces, he's hungry. He wants it. I'm gonna give you another center back though, but I'm definitely gonna I'm not gonna break the rules, but I'm definitely gonna put Mark there. Let me see. Another player.
You can have anybody. You could go the highest priced if you want to. You can go anywhere.
Before the injury, Blanco, for sure. Blanco, he left foot, right foot. Don't let the stature fool you. He was an MVP candidate going into everything. Respect that man. Blanco, for sure.
Good choice.
Carlos from LAFC. Come on. Even though he's coming off injury, silky with that left foot. Like I said, I didn't play to his bow, but I didn't see everything. So I'm going to give you two players, a midfielder. Blanco's going to give you that box-to-box, and he's going to score you goals and give you assists. Vela, he's going to give you that spice. He's going to give you that whatever you need up front. That's three players.
Because, of course, and we didn't include Ray in the tuck team, of course Ray's on the squad, right?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously.
He's trying to lift. He's trying to save the world. The aliens are coming.
Yeah, but I'm trying not to use it. You said no union players.
No union.
Yeah, see, I'm following the rules, so.
Got two more names.
Let me see. You know, for a defender, I'm going to take Kyle Duncan.
Hmm.
He's gonna give you a little bit of everything. I watched what he did with his left foot this past weekend. I'm giving Kyle Duncan the nod. Said he's a defender too. He's got some pace. He keeps the ball. I mean, he's in this mix, maybe potentially for this U.S. national team, you know, camp in January if we do have it. So I'm gonna throw Kyle Duncan in there.
Trusting the young guys.
Yeah, trusting the young guys. Obviously, I honestly would have went Aronson or Fontana, but we're not using union players.
Correct.
Let me see. I got two other players. Oh, Mr. Chicago himself. I seen Mike McGee the other night trying to claim Mueller out here in Orlando. I'm gonna take Chris. You know, I'm gonna have some more you. I seen what he did with the free kick. He's having a superb season. Like I said, It's not lost on me to celebrate other players either. So I'm gonna take Chris. I'm gonna put him in there. Let him get a run of play. He's in good form. So I'm gonna take him.
I like it. Cash.
And then one other player. Got two defenders.
I'm just waiting to see where your mind goes here.
Yeah. The Chris Mueller poll, I did not expect.
We've been trying to get the MVP campaign rolling, but it's just not happening for
Pozuelo.
See, as soon as you said MVP, bop, Pozuelo. Everybody knows.
Pozuelo, I'm not even gonna lie.
Everybody knows except Weeby. Everybody knows.
Dude, I've been Weeby. What are you talking about? Every single column I write says it's Pozuelo. Here are the other candidates, Charlie. I say that on this show all the time. Don't give me the squinty eyes.
Look at Jeff's face.
I spent too much time with you, Charlie.
Gosh, what do you say? Gosh, what do you say about MVP?
Weeby? I don't listen to him anymore. I don't know.
Fair.
I got all no right, receipts for you, Charlie. It all goes in and out.
There's the team right there. But let's get on the player kids real quick. You seem to have a lot of faith in this. You seem to be team player kids. As a veteran in this league who's seen sort of an evolution, more homegrown players, more, at least this year in particular, more young players getting opportunities, what would you, if you're an MLS head coach, if you're a decision maker, as a player who's on the field trying to get points, how would you handle young players in this league? What do they need?
I mean, especially in this season, I think it was a good time to play or to experiment, especially in the run of play of everything that's gone on. Obviously, it's different with every organization, every franchise, but it's how can you integrate them where they're going to be successful. I think that the Philadelphia Union has done a great job. One thing, you know, this isn't in secret. How we play at the first team is how the academy plays all the way down. In an instance. So they're familiar with the tactics before they even get the opportunity to play in the first team. And then at the end of the day, it comes down to the abilities of that young player. When you put them in these environments, you'll know after a while. Real recognizes real. You'll start to see, okay, this player really has it. We can throw him in this game. He'll be all right. And if you don't try the players, it's trial by fire. You know, they're going to have to get thrown out there sometime. And I think that the Union have done a great job with a mixture of both throwing them out there, seeing if they sink or swim, but at the same time, putting them in spaces where they are going to also succeed to build their confidence game by game to start to build a professional career. I think these are all vital components when thinking about it, especially like if I'm like a manager or player development on that side, it's no different than that. And then I mean, I think the union too has also been vital in the development and number one, giving them repetition and game and building upon things. Obviously, there's a lot of transition with various teams right now, whether they're going to play in USL or not. But I think that's a very vital step, too, that's not lost on me as a player and seeing we didn't have these necessary resources that some of these young players have. But it's all about – it comes down to the player as much as it comes down to the organization as well as the team. Are you willing to sacrifice that? You know, they're coming in from a mental side, a youthful side. You know, when you come into this is grown man business. For us, Mark McKenzie, Brendan Aaronson, I've had these talks with Matt Real, Matt Freeze, all the homegrowns, even Derek Jones. You see him flourishing at Nashville right now, getting a run for play. You know, Derek's not a finished product by any means, but this is one of my good friends. But you see what he's doing there. And I like to say that the union helped develop these qualities. You know, it was just something that had to be done for him to fully play and flourish. But I said, we threw him out in the fire before he went to the under-20 World Cup and he flourished. So it's about the mentality of the player, but also the environment and taking advantage of the capability. Sometimes we play young players out of position and they never reach their maximum, you know, potential, but putting them where they're going to succeed first. You know, Dallas, FC Dallas, you know, they're supposed to be like the epitome too, but I think the union is right there and they do a great job.
Tell us when you knew. Oh, go ahead.
No, I want to ask, and you kind of touched on it, but you've been around for a while. You talk about playing youth with Matt Hedges, who's Defensive Player of the Year, Perry Kitchen, international guy. Are these players nowadays, are they better? Are the young players, is a Brendan Aaronson at 18 or 17, a Mark McKenzie and Austin Trusty and Aaron Sorensen, are these guys better than they were 5, 10, 15 years ago? Or is it that development and that pathway?
I think it's the development and pathway because everybody develops differently.
Good, because if you just said no, they're better than us. Then
I have to ask Ray because Charlie wouldn't tell me.
Don't you dare! Don't you dare!
No. It's development because I give you an example like Matt Hedges. You know, when we were growing up, Chuck, it was all about the ODP system coming through that national, and nobody put Matt Hedges on any radar. This man now has a couple caps. No, has had a prolific career. Same thing with Perry Kitchen. You know. A workhorse, you know, he ended up going to Akron, doing well for himself. I think different people develop differently under coaches too. And I said, that's not lost on me either. Sometimes a person grows in their game, depending on the coach giving them an opportunity or seeing the actual capability. So it's not necessarily that the player is better than, but, you know, are you going to take advantage of the opportunities when presented to you as well? Because you know, at the same time, I said, being in the league, one thing, like I said, life in football is different. The mentality that we have also, and why I'm encouraging a lot of younger players, their mindset is different than us. You know, the grind is tougher for us. Sometimes too, and I have to say this respectfully, sometimes too many homegrown players get a run of play and they take it for granted and everything's easy for them, but they've never been battle tested beforehand. So then they don't know how to act when adversity comes. And I have this conversation all the time with my homegrowns and they know I mean business when I'm talking with them about that. And they respect that conversation as well, because it's also a mental component of the game as much as it is physical.
When did you know that Brendan Aaronson had something different?
When I saw him on Union 2, when he played there, and I seen his capabilities, and immediately for him, he kind of got thrown in the fire because of injury. And then when he had his first game and the lights weren't too big, the chanting and the noise wasn't too great for him. And it was like, he was just a kid out there running. I was like, yo, he's fearless. Yeah, I mean, he got to get a little weight upon him in the weight room. But I said, my guy's good. He went out here and did his thing. And I believe it was against Atlanta was his first start.
No, I think so. He got the goal, yeah.
And he got the goal. When I seen that, when you had 50,000 people, 60,000 people chanting, booing at you and stuff like that, and it was like he was in his own world. And I was like, yo, he's good. He's good. So Some people you just know sooner than later, and then you're like, he's good. So
we'll see him, of course, maybe in Champions League come January. I'm sure be watching that, right? Seems like you watch everything. Let's talk about something more serious before we let you go. And, of course, you know, what's dominating our society right now is the election, is voting, is exercising this right that we all have that are citizens. Tell me how you're thinking about, feeling about where we are right now and your responsibility as an American.
I mean, the Lord's blessed me with this platform to play professional soccer, and it's my responsibility to advocate that we do need change in the country. You know, we're not all going to have all the answers for what change looks like, but exercising your vote come November 3rd is everybody's civil responsibility, especially it's you lobbying for what you see or allowing your voice to be made known on who you vote for. I mean, that's not the concern of who you vote for, but all I'm asking is for each and every inhabitant of the United States to really go out and vote. Lines have been long, you know, I get it, you know, inclement weather is starting to happen. I get it. But, you know, don't let that be an excuse for you not to really let your voice be heard if you feel one way or the other. There's a lot of civil unrest going on right now in the country. There's a lot of divide, not just among different ethnicities, but just in a lot of different components. And we just need help. We need help in bridging the technology divide in our schools. This e-learning is not easy on parents. We need help also just in general with gun violence. Not even talking about what we've seen with George Floyd or various people, but you know, there's too many killings going around nationwide. And, you know, I appreciate this opportunity to talk about this because I said, you know, the violence that's happening in communities is crazy. The death total is up across the country in certain areas. We need to do better too. It's not always on legislation. It's not always on, you know, our representatives or our governors or mayors, but we as people have to do better just all around the board. There's a lot of things, healthcare. There are people that are in assistance, especially as unemployment has been the highest it's ever been. People need aid right now. We need hope. We need a lot of things in this country. And like I said, I have to do a lot of reading, a lot of ciphering through a lot of things. But I feel like all of us can play an integral part in really advocating and or lending a hand. And I know MLS has done a great job, you know, in various capacities and in different initiatives that they've done. And even our organization, you know, I went to them with a letter from the other professional athletes, you know, from Carson Wentz, helped Bex a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of the Sixers players, and then got our state representatives involved and took it to our ownership group to open up the stadium for a 3-day voting site. And we saw a great turnout. It was a safe environment. The ballots were protected. It was easy. Obviously, we weren't at full capacity. So I encourage more stadiums to try to use their resources in or that space because there's available parking. You know, you can use these concourse where it can be spaced out and have multiple voting stations or polling stations, excuse me. You know, this is just our time, especially there comes a time in every generation where you have to do what's right for your generation and or the torch is passed to you. You know, people have fought the good fight before you for things that were important in that time. And we see, especially, you know, there was another shooting in Philadelphia this couple of days ago. The city's been indifferent about it. I'll say it like that. You know, I'm trying to bring peace to the city. Looting and rioting is not the answer because you're really diminishing your own community where you have to go back into and or it does not solve a lot of things. So we need peace collectively. I'll say that to end what I'm saying. We need peace in the land. We need to come together collectively. So
I think there's been something really impressive done with Black Players for Change in that sense, and you guys coming together. And before I let you go, Ray, we talked about last week the announcement that you made in conjunction with MLS with the resources that are being poured in addition, $1 million to the organization, in addition to a bunch of other things. I know that you think a lot about what will happen for you after this playing career is over and you plan for that. When you look at and reflect on what BPC has been able to accomplish and this partnership that you guys have created with MLS to do these other things, what jumps to mind? What's the most important thing? What should people listening be thinking? Ah, this was a huge point of success, point of emphasis for you and, and your colleagues in the organization.
Well, first and foremost, I think that already creating safe places with the U.S. Soccer Foundation. I know Chuck is familiar with that in urban areas. We're helping introduce soccer to people, brown and black people, in places that wouldn't have the resources or opportunity to engage in the world's game. And we're giving them a creative outlet, number one. Number two, we're helping break down cross-cultural barriers. This isn't just about black players, but we're allowing other people to really understand the indifferences that we have to go through as players. You know, and I think having conversations with people in the front offices and ownership groups, I think they're starting to really see that the realities that we face aren't all the same as our counterparts. I think those are two vital things not to be lost on, and to bring attention also, like I said, to the injustices that are going on. We have this responsibility, this platform. It's something now that is so very real that you can see in real time due to technology. Just being an advocate for change. We also want to say, you know, being a member of Black Players for Change, you know, black people that are within the game and colored people that were in the game, they're very capable of doing the job of some of these executive positions, front office positions, and or can bring resources and open the world of football in America up to new heights as well. You know, they just need an opportunity, and I believe that we're advocating in the right manner for that. And so it's been good. I believe that everyone who has been vital on every side, who have been allies and partnerships, have realized that once they've gotten in the room and had conversations with the Black Players for Change.
A lot to reflect on there. We hope you're doing it as you listen right now. In addition to maybe tucking in your shirt, just in solidarity with Ray Gaddis. Ray, it's been a pleasure to chat with you, man. Good luck going forward. Supportership, playoffs, everything in between.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. It's been wonderful.
I told you we'd get you on 5v5.
I appreciate it, man.
Oh, see, you were Team Nashville. Back in January, you were Team Nashville. Producer Anders sitting there in that Ray Gaddis interview, just combing through the archives. It both makes me happy and brings me immense sadness because, I miss the studio so much.
Yeah, it does. It's funny. Weeby chooses to key in on the, well, you were Team Nashville back then. What I choose to key on is when I say something, I'm right. So that's the part. I knew that Sebastian Berhalter and Aiden Morris would be good 8 months ago. So if I'm telling you Jonathan Mensah is MVP now or Defensive Player of the Year, I must be right because the trend is correct. And you're all about recent form.
All right, fine. I'm going to let this go. I'm going to let it fade away. But I'm going to ask Charlie to complete our Defender of the Year finalist group. Because I think we can all agree, right? It is Mensah and Walker Zimmerman right now. Am I wrong about that? I know you've been arguing vehemently against Zimmerman, but those are two.
No. Yeah.
And then who's the other one? I think Doyle put out like Tinnerholm into this group. We do need an outside back since we had Ray on and we asked him about that. Or maybe we go another center back, though I don't think there's a standout. Who would you go with right now, Charlie? We'll do process elimination as you think.
No.
Union, so would you, is it Mark McKenzie?
Can I throw out?
It's between these two for me. Okay. Mark McKenzie and Antonio Carlos.
Boom. That's the name I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. It's so good when it just rolls off the tongue and you feel just so good. And you just see the center backs because they both have been phenomenal at putting out fires, at reading the game. You look at their partners, whether for Mark McKenzie, if it's Jack Elliott, if it's Glesness, no matter who it is, he looks the part and he is the centerpiece to that back line. And yeah, you do have Andre Blake behind you, who is phenomenal. And for Orlando, Galese has been phenomenal for them as well. But Antonio Carlos, Robin Janssen alone, when he's playing, forced to play 1v1, and it is not it. He gets beat. He's slow in the turn. Sometimes he steps and is able to leave that space in behind. Antonio Carlos complements him so well that now they make a formidable partnership. And now Robin Janssen looks like a solid, capable Major League Soccer center back.
Again, fullbacks just getting completely forgotten in this conversation. Let us know. Of course, we have our fullback of the year for the Continental
Awards. But you brought up Anton Tannerholm, and I think, he's taken a step forward.
That one's more on overall quality.
Would you take him over Richie Larea?
I know, that's the big question. It's more on overall quality. When if I'm saying attacking and defending, I think I would go Tannerholm. If I'm saying just in the final third, I'm going Richie Larea.
I don't think his defending's that great.
Tannerholm.
Yeah.
I don't agree. We can have people call in, and we're also going to do this on the Continental Awards.
Can I just throw out, if we're doing our fullback award, someone has to put up Lierdam, because I think he's the most consistent two-way fullback in Major League Soccer.
Hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Wednesday, six teams clinched playoff spots. We talked about Nashville. They did it. Congratulations to them. The Revs did it too. Red Bulls did it. LAFC, Portland, Sporting Kansas City. Finally, the Eastern Conference.
I think the terminology is it happened to the Revs. I don't think the Revs did it.
That's fair.
Because they got in on a loss. Yeah. But continue.
Yeah. NYCFC earlier in the week and Seattle as well. So we're starting to see X's next to people's names. Which of those... we're just going to go to the Revs, because we have somebody who wrote in and said, please talk more about the Revs. Interesting team with Kessler, Wynn, Turner, Heal, Boo, Buxa, and Boomer. Heal is back, which I didn't think that would happen, Charlie. Tell us about the Revs. You know more than us.
Yeah, watching Henry Kessler and his growth from last year in the ACC and to this year, as well as, seeing Daryl Dike, what they've been able to do on the same team, University of Virginia, I think they were able to really make that step, the transition. For Dike, was sitting on the bench and learning and watching, what it's like, the speed of play. How can he be, he doesn't have breakaway blazing pace, but how can he still, with the timing of his runs, be just as effective? And I think he's learned over the first 3 or 4 or 5 months that, okay, this is how, with this Orlando team, with Nani, if I can hold up the ball well and make good runs into the box and be effective, now you're starting to see him score goals. And I think in college soccer, he wasn't as efficient when he got the opportunity. In Major League Soccer, he's getting the opportunity and he's scoring goals. Henry Kessler has been consistent from day one. I love how he reads the game so well. And Andrew Farrell is a little bit more aggressive. He likes to be drawn into midfield and make tackles, and he can be pulled out of space, out of position. Henry Kessler fills it. And the pair has made it, now respectable when you watch the New England Revolution play. Matt Turner has been lights out this year. And expected goals on chances shot at his net, he's come up big. And that's why I think he's easily goalkeeper of the year in Major League Soccer. But Henry Kessler, no matter who he's playing against, no matter what style of formation, because of his sense to put out fires, he's good on the ball. He actually makes the right decision. He'll get by. He'll dribble into midfield to get by the press, and then he can play that ball. He can break lines. He's shown that as well. He deserves to be Rookie of the Year
because he's been consistent.
Correct.
But it doesn't exist.
He's getting robbed. And I'm just going to say, as a player watching, Henry Kessler and seeing his growth, you have to see the ceiling. And when I watch Henry Kessler, I see a player that can really be one of the greats when it comes to center backs in this league for years to come, because of here and not necessarily his body. And he has so much more room to grow, which is also, I think, for all Revolution fans, you're like, oh, we got a good one. We got a gem.
And for MLS teams, right? You look at all the good MLS teams over the last 10 years, you get one of those guys out of the draft. That's something you can build around whatever changes, because Bo's a little bit older and how long will he be here? It doesn't matter. If you have a lockdown center back, similar to what you got from Andrew Farrell, like, that's something you can continue to keep you competitive. And the Revs need it, because, Charlie, you watched them last night and it's a rotated team. The attack is different, but they don't have a ton of ways to create chances consistently when the star players aren't in, and just do it by themselves. And so they're going to need to be locked down defensively if they're going to make a playoff run, which is something I think in February we all thought they were capable of. And 2020's thrown a ton of curveballs. And I think they still can, but it has to start in the back for them.
Yes. AC&T Young Player of the Year, by the way, is what's replacing Rookie of the Year. I think it's the right choice. I do.
Not now, though.
On October 28th.
If you would make this announcement before the MLS is back tomorrow, everyone says, okay, fine, we get it. if you made it this announcement before the season started, okay, fine. But to announce it at the end of the year, 2 weeks before the season ends, when a player like Henry Kessler, even Daryl Dike, these players that are in the conversation for it, that are like, oh, I'm so excited. I've been working so hard for this. Oh, now I have no shot at it because Diego Rossi, you might as well tattoo that, sketch that thing right now and say, young player of the year goes to Diego Rossi. Then, you know, what is that? What good does that do for these younger players who really were in the running for rookie of the year?
I do think it's the right decision long term. I now think that a door has been opened for the Continental Awards. There is no longer a rookie of the year award, but we can fill that hole and we will fill that hole because we had been the forerunners for the young player of the year because that hadn't existed. So now we just switch things up.
Give it to Henry Kessler now.
We got to vote.
We shouldn't name it rookie of the year. We should do it in the name of the Super Draft. It should be Super Draft best whatever.
So Super Draft pick of the year.
Exactly. Two, we should continue a young player and we should make it younger. Because 23, I think, is fine for the award.
I think it's 22.
I
think it's 22 for MLS.
No, how can Diego Rossi get it if he couldn't be on 22?
I think it was 22 at the start of the season. So, yeah, you're right, wiggle room. You can't be 23.
So, I think we should do one that's 20 and under or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, it's the teenager of the year.
The tweet. I don't know what that means.
Well, Chris Pratt hit us up and said there needs to be a draft pick of the year because
thank you, Chris.
My boy Henry Kessler is about to get robbed, and coming in via the draft is a challenge all its own. It deserves to be recognized. So, the Chris Pratt Super Draft Player of the Year. We probably won't stick with that.
If you take Chris Pratt and you rejumble the letters, it spells Charlie Davies.
Really?
And it's Henry Kessler.
All right. Well, we'll do a vote on that one. We are planning to announce which Continental Awards are official on Monday. So tune in for that one as well. And I'll have a column with all the stuff that you sent in on Friday at MLSsoccer.com. Before we get out of here, what was the result that caught your eye the most on this Wednesday night? And then we'll do the BetMGM Predict 6. To look ahead to the weekend. What was the result that you said, ooh, dang. I'm going to go throw out Orlando, Atlanta out there because just another step forward in Orlando's sort of march past respectability all the way to bona fide contender. But I do have to say that Joseph Martinez's troll game makes Dom Dwyer look like an amateur.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, come on. You can't. That's the mistake. See, that you can't go and try to copy what he did to you, because then that still shows that he, despite being on the sidelines, despite not even playing, is so far and so deep into your head that you still can't get out from it. So you have to start your own thing. You can't go take his thing. That's not how it works.
No, but even so, like, sure, you want to do it, but make it over the top, over the top. This was like, I'm like, no, it's got to be way more. Dom, I know you had it in you to do it.
I know he
more.
Does. Agree
to do it ham way it more over the top. Yeah, ham it up.
I mean, go to the concession stand because Joseph's like he's sucking a chip dry of hummus. I assume given this show at the very end, he's got like the emoji expressions on his face. He's got the hammock in his living room. You just can't live up to it. But Daryl Dike, dominant and impressive in this game, as Ray Gattis, and I love you had the shout out for Chris Mueller. Chris Mueller's stats are just out of this world, and I think right now, Oscar Pareja, he's going to fight with Jim Curtin if he wins Supporter Shield, and obviously with, I think, Gary Smith for Coach of the Year. But I would give it, I think, to Oscar Pareja because he has completely changed what was a culture in that club of, let's just be honest, losing. That's what it was. And he came in and changed it like that. So body of work, right now, I feel it would be Oscar Pareja, but Jim Curtin's going to have an awful lot to say about that. Okay. If the Union win the Shield. What's the result for you, Charlie? What jumped out?
Portland Galaxy.
Ay, ay, ay.
All right.
In normal times, we would have started the show with this and just dug in, but we've done it so many times at this point that it just...
Yeah. It's just like getting beat over the head. How can Galaxy be playing like this? I never would have thought I'd look at Galaxy looking like Chivas USA. You know, it's... You have Jonah Dos Santos. You have, you know, Chicharito. Not on the field for this match, but you have him in the building, so to speak. You have Sebastian Legette. You have players with quality. To be down 3-0 with all the pressure that is on the side and on the organization, I'm like, you can't be serious. And there's just no identity. There's no identity. You had Zlatan. You got rid of him. You brought in Chicharito. You have Christian Pavone, who on his own, is one of the best players in this league. And you can't get it done. You can't figure out a way to play an attractive attacking style of football. Boggles my mind.
Forget the attractive stylistic side. Just results, like with those pieces. Just finding a way to any way possible
to not give up 5 goals and
correct.
Lose.
To not just be wiped off the field, essentially. And Christian Pavone is almost certainly not going to be back. I think they came out and reported that 20 million option with Boca, they're not going to do that. And I think that's really the only move that you have to make. You don't have a foundation to build around. What's that 20 million going to get for you? And then Dennis DeCosta at halftime with Taylor Twellman and John Champion basically brushed off all the talk about Guillermo Barrichello and his future, which I think that's a message in itself. And then GBS had like a one question press conference afterwards. It is tough times for the Galaxy. And that 5-2 loss is just another in a series of low points for them this season. What's your result, Dave? I know, like, you hit the Chivas USA, and I was like, probably fair, to be honest.
Shout out to Sam Stayskull and Pablo Maurer, who wrote an awesome piece about Chivas USA that everyone should read, because Mikael Galindo and Nick LaBroca both get mentioned, and when legends are somewhere, you have to go follow them.
Exactly.
My result is Dallas beating Miami 2-1. Brian Reynolds, huge game. The attack wasn't really clicking, and Ryan Hollingshead and Brian Reynolds, the two fullbacks, carried them. Weeby's guy, of course.
Of course.
And for Always Miami, that may have been it. They still obviously have more games to get in, but that may have been the death punch for them. They don't create chances. Higuain sets up Pizarro for the lone goal. It comes off a deflected pass. Higuain, amazing through ball. Pizarro finished well. Outside of that, there's just no flow to the attack. There's no opportunities. No. Higuain looks frustrated, and I think that might kind of be it for them.
Producer Hunters asks, when did Weeby know that Brian Reynolds had something different? And it's just a feeling. You know, it's one of those things you can't really be taught.
I thought you scouted for Bayern Munich with him.
Well, you know,
something. Didn't you tell Bayern to sign him?
Yeah, you know, and then Bayern said, we messed up. We signed Chris Richards, but that worked out pretty well for us.
So stupid, and I'm saying, Bayern.
Hey, look, in the future, you know, just listen to
me.
How
do they win a Champions League operating this way?
Well, they have me in the group. You know, they have me to rely on, so that's big for them. Before we get out of here.
Danke,
we. Yeah, MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. Of course, every single weekend you have a chance to win the big bucks. It's even bigger now, $2,500 prize as opposed to what it had been, which was $500, which was still pretty awesome. You have to pick 6 games. Then you have little predictions off of each game. Columbus Philly is the game of the weekend, I think, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on ABC and TSN. That's on Sunday, but also on Sunday, it's the New York Derby, 7 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus and DAZN, NYCFC Red Bull. Dave, who you got in this one?
Maxi Morales back, so NYCFC looks better, but the Red Bulls have some life. It was 3 straight ties. They get the late goal from Aaron Long against the Revs. They just seem to play with more energy. Florian Vallot, Caden Clark, all these guys seem to be unleashed a little and enjoying their soccer. So I'm going to stick with the Red Bulls. I thought Long and Parker looked as good as we've seen them over the course of this year, and I think they continue it, and they're a team that you don't want to play in the playoffs.
Try to go to New York City FC.
Why?
I think that because the playoffs are on the horizon, they're just starting to get into form and get into a rhythm, and something we hadn't really seen all year. And so over the past probably 2 or 3 weeks, you're starting to get a sense that, okay, now with Max Morales getting back in the side, you know, what Anton Tinnerholm has done for them, Castellanos now being that knowing that he's the top of the spear, he's got to be that reliable goal scorer. Now they're finding that identity again. And I think this team is going to be scary come playoffs, because Alexander Ring is probably one of the best central midfielders in this league that just doesn't get enough credit. So they're a team to watch for me.
I'm going to split the difference. Give me a draw.
That's what
it works. You have 3 options and you got to get it right if you want to win the $2,500. I'm taking the draw on this one. They must predict 6. Presented by BetMGM. We got to get out of here. We got things to do, people to see. Charlie, Dave, Ray Gaddis, you're the man as well. Everybody tuck in your shirts. Go have yourself a good time. We'll see
you on Monday. Tuck in your shirt and go vote. Or mail in your ballot. Whatever. Well, bring it in.
Yeah. One of those two. We'll see you on Monday, everybody.